listening to Castrol CarCast on Podcast One.
All right, special CarCast planned. You're going to hear the road trip back from Goodwood to Heathrow and a retelling of all that we can remember from running up the hill and all the hijinks at Goodwood. So we'll get to the inside of the rental car in a second from jolly old England. First, I'll tell you about Quip. Most of us brush our teeth wrong. That's because most brands focus on selling flashy gimmicks rather than better brushing. Quip is an electronic toothbrush that's a fraction of the cost of the bulkier brushes. Has a built-in timer with guiding pulses to remind you when to switch sides. I love that. I had a dentist tell me once, too, don't grip that thing too tight. Hold it lightly. Tips of your fingers. You're pushing too hard. Quip also has subscription plans delivering new brush heads every 3 months for just $5, including free shipping worldwide. Smart. Quip starts at just $25, and you can get Quip at go to getquip.com/carcast right now. You'll get your first refill pack for free. So get your first refill pack for free at getquip. That's QUIP.com/carcast. Getquip.com/carcast. All right, let's hop inside that rental car speeding to Heathrow from Goodwood. Get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on. Mandate, get it on, and welcome to CarCast from the road. I'm Adam Carolla. That's Matt, the motorator, DeAndrea, sitting behind me in our rental car, right, Matt?
Yeah, our Hyundai Santa Fe.
Now, you should know that
with a manual transmission?
Oh, yeah. Alan is driving, and Nate Adams is here with us as well. More on them in a minute. We're driving home from, well, we're driving to London Heathrow. From Goodwood, from the Goodwood Festival Speed, the hill climb. It is a Sunday, and it's unseasonably hot out here, Matt.
Yeah, we were prepared for rain, I think, and we're sort of expecting it, but it was been in the 80s the whole time. It's been nice, a little humid, a little sweaty, but a beautiful weekend at the Goodwood Estate.
Yeah, so the weather was beautiful, even a little bit hot, but good for the spectators and good for the cars on the track. Every manner of cars here, we saw some Mercedes that were mind-numbing. You know, you think about Ferrari GTOs in terms of rare exotic sports cars, but they have stuff from the 50s, the 30s, the 40s that Stirling Moss drove in, like, some of that stuff from the 50s, and we saw some, like, I don't know, F1 cars before it was F1 Grand Prix cars Mercedes had from the 30s that are just, if a GTO is $50 million and they made 36 of them, these cars they made three of.
Yeah, we saw the straight 8 Mercedes and the V8 Mercedes with the supercharger on it, which we'll post a bunch of photos to our social media at the CarCast show.
Engineering that was unheard of at its time. I mean, we were looking at one V8 supercharged car. Even the supercharging was much cooler back then because everything was aluminum with fins and it'd be mounted in the middle of the car. I wish I, middle of the engine, like, I don't know, direct drive from the crank or something. Like, I wish I knew more about how that kind of supercharging worked. Like, when you see the supercharged Bentleys and the supercharger's, like, sitting on the front bumper and there's no belts or chains or cables or anything.
Some sort of, like, shaft-driven thing or some sort of prop-driven thing. And I'm always curious, like, the specs. Like, how much compression is that engine? It's got to be super low. And then how much power does the supercharge add? You know, is it 100 horsepower, but then 130 with the supercharger? Or is it anywhere even near that?
Well, from the looks of the complexity of the engine and the castings, I mean, we're looking at stuff from 1937, 1939, and the engineering that was going on inside that engine bay was unbelievable on the V8 and the straight eight, and mainly on the suspension, because the A-arms and connecting arms and everything was all cast aluminum.
We kind of take that for granted now, because now we would, you know, if we were building stuff like that from scratch, we'd 3D print it, and then if we like it, we'd CNC it. We'd just machine it out of aluminum and have a big, you know, a big five-axis CNC, cut that thing all night and get it all perfect in the morning when you came back into the shop. But
it was unbelievable engineering. And the V8 supercharged car, these are like silver arrow looking things, like crazy aluminum. Everything's aluminum. I was looking at one, and it was from 1937, and I thought to myself, oh, I guess you guys took a few years off in between building this one and the next one. Maybe something came up during that time. And I was looking at it, and I thought, God, I'd hate to go to war with the country that built this, because they also probably do a hell of an airplane and a tank and everything else. So the Mercedes stuff is, you know, we don't talk about it that much. It's sort of not discussed that much. I think they had the big crash at Le Mans 59 or 55. I wanted to say 55, and then I thought the car was from 55, but I guess it was. Either way, big crash in 55, and then they pulled out of racing. So, and then they came back much later. But you don't hear that much about Mercedes, or at least we don't talk that much about it. But they're vintage race cars are unheard of in terms of unrivaled in terms of engineering, but also in terms of one of one, like that Stirling Moss car that was sitting there.
Yeah.
You know, if a Ferrari GTO is 50 million, that thing's 85, right?
It would have to be. And the, by the way, the Mercedes from that 1955 Le Mans, they had a couple of them. I believe the rule was that the government said Mercedes wasn't allowed to sell those to anybody privately. But a few years ago, when we did one of the private Laguna races, one of the Rich White Guy Day races, somebody was there with the car. And he said, oh, we don't own it. We just made a deal to be the caretakers of it from Mercedes. And I asked that guy, what do you think it was worth? This was a few years ago. He said probably $100 million.
Oh, yeah, and that was 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah.
So things have gone up a little. So if you're listening and you own that car, I'll go ahead and tell your boss to blow you. When you go into UPS this morning, tell them no can do. Speaking of GTOs, we got to go look at a 250 62. I think it was a 62. Thank you. And wait, whose was that? I keep screwing up
Nick
the
Mason.
Name. Nick Mason.
Yeah, drummer of Pink Floyd.
Got too many rock stars in my head. Nick Mason. And we went to follow the car. And as we went up the hill, turned out there was a professional driver in it, a driver for hire. Nick had driven it the day before, but I do believe
Friday and Saturday, I believe.
Friday and Saturday, the days before. But
now we looked this up, and he bought the car in 1977 for £35,000, which was like $47,000 U.S.
It was actually a little bit more back then with the rate, but it was still under double. I mean,
yeah.
Meaning it was under 70.
So he bought a $70,000 Ferrari that he has today. And talk about return on your investment. This is every bit of 50?
Every
million?
Bit of 50.
You know, I mean, we know that, what's his name? The guy that owns WeatherTech floor mats was supposed to have the most expensive car purchased now at $70 million, and that was a 250 Ferrari.
Yeah, and I'll bet you Nick Mason would say his is better. But
I mean, I would say the Nick Mason ownership adds something to it as well. He's had it for so long, and he's done so many cool things with it. He's also driven at Le Mans. Not that car, but he's been a driver at Le Mans.
I didn't know that. The car has what looks like newish paint,
but the interior is as is, like leather seats, like two leather seats that are very well worn. And the guy drove it, said, put your head in there, give it a smell. And it smells like a 60s car, like not that much different than like ones you grew up with your dad was driving, just that old 60s smell. So that was a very, very interesting piece. And I didn't know that those cars had a transmission tunnel mounted speedo.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Right by, I think Nate got some video of the interior, lots of video of the interior of the car that we can
and I'll just remind you guys that we have a bunch of videos that Nate shot. He's going to cut them all together. They're going to be available on the Vero social media network and Motor Trend On Demand.
Yeah, just unbelievable, one-of-a-kind stuff. But that thing had a speedo, a big speedo, right in front of that gated shifter on the transmission tunnel that's turned toward the driver, with like a leather backing on it, like it was in a leather cozy, which just made it look all that much more interesting. Anyway, just a great piece. Everything was there. 917s, the 917 with the Gulf livery, the Rothman 911 Paris de Dakar rally car was right next to us. We saw, was it a 961?
A 961. It was like a 1986 or 87, I believe 86. 961 Porsche. I think it's the only one. And I want to say the owner's name or the guy or the caretaker, his name is Andy Prill, something Prill, P-R-I-L-L. Very, very nice guy. He was fantastic. We've got some contact information from him. We're probably going to see him up at Monterey. And if we do, we should sit down with him and chat with him on this show as well. But what a cool car. That was just done right. I talked to the driver, and he's like, I'm just kind of a driver for hire. And he's like, I couldn't have a better job in the world than driving this car. He loved it.
Well, he could have got paid to drive Nick Mason's GTO.
That seemed like a lot more work.
Other than that,
I think the 961 is probably easier to drive.
The 961 quietly was one of our favorite cars out there because it almost looked like someone took a turbo Porsche from the 80s and put like some sort of wide body kit and a rear spoiler on it and painted it up in a Rothman's tribute, right?
Yeah.
So like it was kind of an interesting piece, but if someone had put a body kit on it and painted it up as a tribute car, you'd go, oh, that was a cool idea. But when you find out it was a real race car and it's one of one and you've never seen it before, that made it that much cooler.
Speaking of that Rothman's 959, the rally car, that guy was out there with that thing, with just the full-on rally tires and everything.
Well, that was a 911. I thought it was a 959 at first when I realized that was a 911. The 959 rally car was up on the big piece of sculpture, I think.
So we're going to have to check the tape on this one.
Well, the one closest to us was a 911.
Okay.
Because I interviewed that guy. I thought it was a 959 for a minute because I thought it was a 959. I was probably talking to you, and you filled my head with misinformation.
Yeah.
But I went and interviewed that guy. I know at this juncture, you still think you're right. Abandon that. Because I interviewed the guy who kept the car, and I said, is this a 959? He went, no, it's a 911. And I know I sounded Middle Eastern.
He sounded angry about it,
German.
Too.
Jesus. He was not happy about me accusing. It was a straight 911. Like you,
what'd you say? I'll still talk to you. It's okay.
Look at picture the rear end, Matt. There was no 959 rear on that car. It wasn't wide enough. It was a straight 911, but it was still the Rothman Dakar thing and driven Paris to Dakar. Like, I don't know. We did the kilometers thing. It was like, I don't know, almost 4,000 mile race or something. 5,900 kilometers, so it's 3,000 miles, right? Four? I said four. Damn it. I thought it was six. Well, you say 59? Oh, 59, yeah. Right?
Yep.
So 6 times 6 is 36, but 6.2 is a little bit more, so it's like a little under 4, right? Okay. So
I looked four of us to do math. Right
I looked at
four of us.
I looked at the top of the I looked at the top of the car, and it said like X on it. I was like, oh, is that guy related to Jackie X, F1 driver? And he's like, that was F1 driver Jackie X. So F1 driver Jackie X not only drove F1, but he drove a 4,000-mile rally from Paris to Dakar. By the way, I don't think you can do that now because of ISIS. I think
that's a good point.
They used to be able to do it, and now they can't do it. Now,
does ISIS send people to the race and just start picking people off, or are we just out completely? Do you have to?
Well, no, it's not. It's not because of the threat they pose. It's they win every year in those Toyota pickup trucks with the machine gun mounts in the back. They're so light, and they're desert people, and those things are bulletproof. You saw that I was talking about on my show, those Toyotas that they don't import into the United States. So they're unbeatable. So they just get, they're like what the Kenyans are to the marathons. So, yeah, you got to look into Paris to Dakar, because they did shut it, or they did do a part where, like, well, we got to go around Al-Qaeda held territory, and then we'll start again. Kind of a sad testimonial, right?
Yeah, not the best endorsement for that race event, but okay.
Now, I don't know if the trouble's on the Paris side or on the Dakar side. I'm going to look into that, but I'm guessing it's a little less in the Parisian side and a little more in the Dakarian.
Yeah, you say desert people, and I think of Star Wars, and I'm coming out of the rocks with the weird masks on, and
it's a lot of that. Weird. So that car was pitted right next to us.
Alan literally just slowed down to look at girls on the side of the road.
We just did, and almost hit him with my mirror.
Okay, quick break to talk about ZipRecruiter. Hiring used to be hard. Now it's easy. You only have to go to one place to get it done. ZipRecruiter.com/car. Oh, that's us. ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes, identifies people with the right experience, and invites them to apply to your job. 80% of employers who post on the job sites, ZipRecruiter, get a quality candidate within the first day. That's within 24 hours. With results like that, it's no wonder ZipRecruiter is the highest rated hiring site in America. So let's not waste any time right now. Our listeners can try ZipRecruiter free at this exclusive web address. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/car. ZipRecruiter.com/car. Try it out for free. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. ZipRecruiter. And who could forget Castrol Edge? Tech advances. They made engines smaller. Boy, you should see these little sewing machine engines in these cars out here in Europe. But they got to work, and that's why they need synthetic, and that's why they need Castrol Edge, made with liquid titanium technology. They've also got together with the Need for Speed video game guys and created a challenge called Titanium Gamer, and you can check it out at Castrol USA YouTube page. It's free. It's a cool video. If you're an enthusiast, well, if you're listening, you're into it. Castrol USA YouTube page. All right, let's get back on the road.
We had the Coca-Cola, so we should talk about the bizarre Coca-Cola 935.
Let me tell you something about that car. That front fender has a striking resemblance to the McLaren Senna.
Yeah, so we had a funny... I don't...
Listen back to CarCast a couple of weeks ago.
Coinkadink? Yeah. I don't know what it was, but like, I get stuff in my head... I'm looking at our ways now. We're trying to get to the airport. I get stuff in my head, and I just get like a snapshot of stuff in my head. And when I get a sort of snapshot of it, I'm not always right, but there's usually some version of it where I am very right. And people try to talk me out of my righteousness, but I'm sticking with it. So... we were looking at the McLaren Senna on Father's Day, right? We went to the McLaren booth and stuff like that. That was great. We're looking at the McLaren Senna. We like the McLaren Senna. I announced that the McLaren Senna front fenders and the arch around the front tire resembled that of a newer, bigger 935 K3 Porsche. Not my 935, but a newer, maybe even tube frame style with the bigger Kremer body on it. So that much I announced.
Right.
And then I said to Max Zapata, go on the computer and make me right. And find me an image. And find me that McLaren Senna image. And so he went on there and he did, you know, we get in our normal arguments where I was like, you're not looking in the right place and you're not making me right and you got to find the thing. And he kept showing me just pictures of 935s and it just had a regular sort of hoop over the front tire and it didn't look right. It wasn't helping my, wasn't making my point. And I just kept kind of, I had it in my head. And I've only seen the McLaren the one time on Father's Day. And I'm not a 935 expert, not that body style, but I still kind of had this like the fender. And also I was saying the front of the fender, but I really meant the fender and the rear of the fender.
Right.
Where
he found us pictures of a 935 at the same angle that we took photos of the Senna, but it didn't show what you were getting at. So you were asking him to find more like side pictures of the 935K.
Yes. And at some point, as I was kind of trying to whittle it down in my brain, at some point I said, oh, show me the Coca-Cola 935. And he's like started pulling up pictures of a Coca-Cola liveried 935, and that didn't really match either. And so it wasn't very satisfying, and at some point we just turned the page and got on with it. And if you guys listen to CarCast, you'll remember that 10-minute discussion about 935. Then when we showed up at Goodwood on Friday, the car pitted directly next to me, and there wasn't anything to the left of the car, only to the right, because to the left was barrier. To the car closest to me, the only car next to our car was a Kremer 935 with the Coca-Cola livery and the exact same fender on it that the Senna McLaren had on it. And that's the guy who was pitted closest right next to us.
And McLaren's booth was 200 feet away with a Senna out front.
Right. So we went out front and I looked at it and we took a picture and then we went to the car right next to our car. I'm meaning 3 feet away from our car in the pit, and it had the same rear part of the fender, right?
Yeah, it did. You'll see pictures. We'll post them up all over our social media.
So Matt, who was extremely right in that situation?
Not Chris.
Well, he wasn't really arguing. He just couldn't find the picture of it, right?
Right. He did find the car, but even the angle wasn't right.
Right.
We just couldn't. It was tough to.
Who was dead nuts on that description?
Yeah,
of that,
that one's you.
Thank you. But it's crazy that the guy pits next to us, right? And then when they go up the hill, when that guy's going up the hill and they got it on the Jumbotron, and they're filming that guy go up the hill in his Coca-Cola 935, they announce that I'm behind the wheel.
Yeah.
Which is kind of insane that 2 weeks earlier we had a long discussion about that 935 with no thoughts about ever seeing it in person, ever not knowing where it was, right?
Well, the Goodwood announcers do not listen to CarCast, I suppose. But
I'm also just saying, it's insane that 2 weeks later that there's an image of that 935 going up the hill in Goodwood and a guy yelling into a mic, that's Adam Carolla driving that car.
Well,
that's never going to happen again, right?
No. The second time you were up there, like, Adam's in the Moby Dick car, which is not your car.
Yeah, they don't sweat the details.
They didn't really go for the details on this one.
The Moby Dick car is another car we'll see featured at Vero, and that car is, I love that car. I love the livery. Is that thing Rothman or Martini? What the hell's that livery?
Oh, there were so many now, I don't remember.
By the way,
again,
you would have
checked the tape.
You would have loved the conversation I had with the guy next to me. You know, when you go to the top of the hill after you do the run, you go all the way up the top of the hill. There's a circular kind of roundabout driveway thing, and then you stop up there, and everyone just piles up, and then at some point they blow a whistle, and you get back in your car. I was able to thankfully bump start my car going down that hill because the battery had crapped out. But I had a guy next to me who ran at Le Mans back in the day, and he told me he drove a 917. And I said, what was the livery on the 917? And he said, it was a factory car. And I said, what was the livery? And he said, it was factory car. And then later on, hold on, I got to look at my ways now. Go to the left.
First one.
Second. I'm sorry. I don't know what that says. Yeah, sorry, second. So
good thing they're roundabouts. We can go around.
Roundabouts.
I love these things.
I would have dug that Yes song a lot more back in junior high if I'd appreciated physically going through a roundabout. So much better than traffic signals. And as we come up to our first traffic signal, you can drive the entire English countryside and never see a traffic signal, which is awesome. What the hell was I talking about? Moby Dick?
No, the guy. Oh, the said guy, what livery was
the guy?
You said what livery?
To the right. Yeah, I said what livery. And the guy
he
was
said
like
a factory car.
The guy said factory car, and then I said okay, and I like asked him again. He said like factory car again, and I had a guy standing in between the two of us because we're both in our cars, so we couldn't yell out the window, and he was like from Switzerland or something.
Left to London.
And I said, and now I wasn't that satisfied because like I'm trying to picture a Porsche factory livery, you know? So then I said, was it Golf livery? And the guy was like, no, it was a factory car. And I was like,
Last year?
I was like, what? What was the livery? And he's like, Martini and Rossi. And I was like, oh, all right. Well, there you go.
There you go.
It took a while. I get the fact that it's a Porsche factory car, but it's still sponsored by somebody. And maybe I should have known more, but I don't know. It could have said Martini.
He was going for value. He was going for value add. He's saying Porsche factory car.
I know, but somewhere around the fourth time, the guy next to you asked, what is the livery? The livery isn't Porsche factory. It's Martini. And by the way, is Martini the same as Martini and Rossi?
I don't know. Sure.
It's gotta be here.
Yeah. We're going to the run. No. I think
not
we're
that one?
Not that one. A third. No. Roundabout. Yep. Oh, around the right one?
Yep.
All right. I don't know how to read my phone. All right. We're doing good. Doing it again.
Which one? All the way around.
All the way around. So.
Damn, Nate's good at roundabouts.
There were, there were a few 917s there, right?
Yeah.
I had one in front of me, like, during the whole staging time. The whole thing just having
one.
A lot of trouble with.
Well, so we can talk about that. The whole setup was cool, but a little hectic on the cars because they were celebrating Porsche's 70th anniversary, and because of that, they really wanted to put a lot of emphasis on that mark as a brand. So we went into this with the two run groups, and we were confused. Are they splitting it into two groups or whatever? And so the run group went out, I don't know, 12:30. You go up the hill, you come back down, and then they had all the cars pull in front of the castle, sit there for 45 minutes, so people can take photos, and then you go directly out and run the hill again, which is fine, but under that scenario, all these cars got to start and stop and shut down the engines, you know, 9 times. And none of these cars are designed to do that. They all have to be on trickle chargers. The alternators aren't enough to start these modern batteries. And then next thing you know, there's 40 cars out there, and 35 of them have jumper packs and people running around and trying to get them done. It was a great display for the fans, but it was certainly odd for all the drivers and the crew.
Yeah.
So that guy in front of you, he had issues with starting his car, and then he had some issues with it running, and then keeping it running, and it sounded like it was misfiring, and and it was kind of hectic on the car. So I think that needs a little more thought into maybe the next year that they do it, whatever the feature is going to be.
It is crazy sitting behind a 917, you know, one of my favorite cars with that kind of crazy history, and just sitting back there. The guy I was sitting behind is the guy who owns the car. Nate knows the guy, right? The green and white.
Oh, David Piper.
David Piper, right. That was David Piper's car. That's the guy who lost a leg during the filming of Le Mans. Is that right, Nate? He got into a bad crash.
I believe so, yes.
Yeah. If you watch the documentary, Le Mans, you'll see an old guy sitting there who got his leg removed after crashing when they were filming Le Mans in a 917, had to have his leg amputated.
The announcer at Goodwood said something to that effect, and just so dry, though. He's like, here, he filmed Le Mans. Lost a leg filming Le Mans, and then that was it. And he just moved on. It's like, what? It's like, what happened? What's going on? He just plugged it as film Le Mans, lost a leg in the process.
I thought he screwed it up and said Moby had his dick removed. And that's Tiff Nadell. Tiff Nadell. Tiff, that's Nadell. The greatest race car driver name ever, right?
Yeah.
Tiff Nadell. Damn it, I should have named my boy Tiff.
Tiff.
Tiff is awesome. I didn't know what Tiff Nadell does. I don't know.
Alive, although, unrelated, we were talking about the name Powers Booth the other day.
That's solid.
And that's a solid name.
Powers Booth is solid. But I like the finesse of a Tiff Nadell.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like a Powers Booth, that's 427 big block. But Tiff Nadell,
that's high RPM.
That's a high RPM, high revving, small piston, overhead cam, European engine, right?
Yeah.
Mechanical slide injection, Tiff Nadell. So, yeah, made the runs. I was behind that guy in the 917. I mean, for an hour. Like, well, they take you out there, they set you out there. And all that guy was doing was trying to keep that car going so his guys wouldn't have to push him and bump start him again. And the whole right bank, there was just fire coming out of the exhaust. And at some point, fire up top in the injection as well. Like just crackling and popping and popping and crackling. And, like, you know, after 20 minutes, it gets a little annoying because there's just plumes of black smoke.
And you're just blowing all kinds of shit right in front of you.
And you're 3 feet behind him. Like, you're sitting at a stoplight, and this guy, no catalytic converters.
No, there's no air and recirculation in your car. You just windows down and helmet on. And
you just sit there, and that guy's just popping and sputtering and popping, black smoke and fire. And, you know, it's part of me is like, this is getting old, but the other part of me is like, that's a 917, and you just got a front row seat to the back of that car, and the back of that car is just all engine. The back of that car is wide open. People kind of forget, you know, the front end looks great, but the back end is really just some fiberglass hanging over the top of those slicks, and then the whole back end's open. So that was a kind of a treat. They had the Gulf liveried 917 there.
Yeah, that's a good looking car.
They had the Brumos RSR.
Tell me about your run.
Hurley Haywood. I don't like to talk. Okay. I swore I was going to go online and look at the line, or look at the run, or look at the me driving 2 years ago or whatever. I kind of whiffed on that. So I realized when I got there, I kind of didn't totally remember what's going on. But we got the program, and I looked in the back, and I saw the shape of the track. So I got to look at that for a little bit. I know that Porsche had super long gears, so I was assuming that I could take the first from the starting point to, like, the first right turn in first gear, because the first gear is good to, like, 80 miles an hour, which, you know, driving around that paddock and trying to get around everywhere with a first gear that's good to 80 miles an hour, and you're just having to throw revs at that crazy engine with the turbos and not have it stall, especially later on when our battery died.
You can't stall. You never get it started again.
And they're like moving you all around, and you're having to put it in reverse, and you can't see, and there's cars behind you, and there are multi-million-dollar cars behind you. There's a guy like waving at you, blowing a whistle, like, turn, turn, and there's people in front of you, and you're like, blah, 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 blah. It's kind of a long first gear. The hardest part about that whole event is getting the car around through a huge crowd of people at a very slow speed.
Yeah. I mean, that being said, still a very well-organized event.
Yes.
But a lot of waiting.
Yeah, and it's just no other way to do it but to have this throng of humanity that your car passes through. You know, you always kind of think, like, doesn't somebody's foot slip off the clutch and some kid get killed?
I think about that all the time, how they don't, how they just manage to avoid that. I don't know what it is, and
I guess the guys are good drivers, which helps, but
yeah,
still,
but some
there's
of those
like
guys
mechanical.
Are 80 plus years old.
I know, there's like mechanical failure, but anyway.
Hey, you've heard me talk about Brush Hero. No more backaches, no more wet, scraped up knuckles. 100% water powered, no batteries or electricity required. Just a standard garden hose. Starter set comes with two brush heads. Soft one for sensitive surfaces like paint and chrome, tough one for serious muck, extensive line of accessories to clean virtually anything, boats, barbecues, yard tools, patio furniture, RVs. I wish I had an RV, but I got cars and I use Brush Hero. It's a really cool device, and you've seen it on Shark Tank. You can get it at Amazon, Costco, Walmart. Or you can buy direct at brushhero.com, and you can get 10% off your entire order when you use the code CARCAST. Plus, orders over $40 ship for free. Brushhero.com. Get the 10% off. Use CARCAST on the code. And who could forget about Geico? Want to save some money on your car insurance? You go with Geico.com. Go there. Spend about 15 minutes and see just how much you could be saving on your auto insurance. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on your car insurance. Take that extra money, put it in your pocket, save it for a plane ticket so we could see out at Goodwood next year. That is the best. That is Geico.
First run, kind of felt it out. Nice having the turbo and kind of pushing it at the end, coming into that. The finish line. Second run on Friday, got into it a little bit more and felt it out a little bit more. Third run, same, and then fourth kind of got into it. We ran into, well, couple things. We saw somebody sent you a picture or us a picture of the car sort of going up the hill, and I don't know when they took the picture or where it was, but you could tell it was planted, right?
Yeah, it was really squatting down. It looked good. And thanks to everybody that tweeted us photos and videos from the live stream, because we weren't able to see it while being there. So, and that's what you're talking about. Somebody tweeted us a couple photos of the car, maybe screenshots from the live stream.
It looked great. It was kind of from behind. And just if you know cars, you can kind of tell the difference between braking or accelerating, or, you know, you can kind of see it. And this looked cool because the rear end looked like it was squatted down and the front end looked like it was lifting up, right?
Yeah.
It just looked like it was into the turbo. Is that correct?
Yeah, it did. And we had we were the only ones with the big 19s on the back. You know, we found out everybody else is running an Avon 18-inch.
Oh, we not running? I thought we were running 18, too.
I thought we were running the 19th. Wasn't that on it?
I'm confused. I thought, we got to work it out.
No, I think we're running the 310, like 702 19, and everybody else is running the
Avon
365 yeah. 760 18.
Now you sound like Lynette.
Yeah. Well, she texted me. That's where I got that.
Poor Matt. His job not only is to find beer, but the other part is like, take a picture of those tires. Take a picture of those tire size. What are those tire size? What are those? Avons? Are those Avons? Take a picture. Take a picture. We got a picture. We got to get the size in. We got to have the size.
You got to have the size.
We got to have the size. Like, it's kind of insane how much I'm into that. But back in the States, we run 16s on the front, 16s on the rear. Back in the day, they ran 16s in the front and 19s in the rear, and they don't make a 19-inch tire anymore. So the guys in the UK and Europe, they all switch to 16, 18. In the States, we just went 16, 16, which I never really liked. I wanted the 18s or the bigger ones in the rear. More period correct. Has a better look, right?
Yeah, it looks closer to the way it was supposed to be because it's supposed to have that staggered wheel. And on the 19, it looks great. You know, but when you go to the 16, there's a lot of sidewall, and the 18 would have been better. And now that we know that there's an 18-inch tire available, that it's the biggest Avon that they make.
Yes.
We'll look into that, I guess.
Yeah, and what people may not realize is, you know, you go, why the height? And maybe I'm the only one who didn't realize this, but they made a rule that said you can't go any wider than like 14 inches. So because everyone is everyone, they realized if they couldn't go any wider with the width of the tire, if they went from a 16 to like a 19, if they went taller, they'd still have a bigger footprint on the track, and that's what they wanted.
Right, as long as the overall diameter increases.
I mean,
if you know what I'm saying, like if you go from your 16 to your 19, but it's still a 28-inch tire,
right,
doesn't make a difference. The wheel doesn't. But you're right, the overall diameter, the rear tire on your car, what we're talking about is like 28 inches in diameter. It's massive. It's 14 inches wide and it's 28 inches diameter. It's got a huge footprint.
It's really tucked in the car, and you don't really notice it. But if you take that tire and rim off of that car and like roll it around the shop, you'll freak out. Like, wow, is this thing huge?
The rim's the size of a bathtub. Like you can sit in it.
But you know, the car makes a lot of power, and I guess they wanted to hook up.
And it ran good, right? After our dyno session and our stint with Jay Leno and whatnot.
It's
got to be making 650 horsepower at the crank. Seems to be pretty solid.
I had psychologically worried that when our battery went dead, that somehow the car wasn't going to run right, even when we got it started. But once we got it started, had this funny thing where we stole somebody's booster who was pissed about it. You missed it, Matt. He was pissed about it. Then he was later on confused. And a little pissed, but at least confused and pissed. Like, it was a crazy thing.
Let's make sure we know where we're going.
The car, we're heading into Heathrow now, or we're getting closer. The car has a booster plug jack that's mounted to the inside roll cage on the passenger side. We've never used it before.
Right.
We're not even sure if it was hooked up to anything, right?
Yeah.
But all those real cars, sometimes they're on the outside of the car, sometimes they're like on the inside of the car. But you roll around with like a battery.
Yeah.
And you plug this big red prong into this other big red prong. And you fire the car, not on its own battery, but on your jumper box that you brought. So it's not like, oh, I'm going to put alligator clips on the battery, because you can't get to the battery. But you can get to this conveniently mounted
thing. Yeah, it's like a quick disconnect.
Right. And so you just snap it in there and do it. And so we were looking around like, oh, our car's dead. How do we do this? And we went up. I said, we got to get one of these boosters. So I ran way up the hill to Don Law's place. Don Law's the guy who helped us out last time. He's there with his son, Justin. They have their Jag, like Super Jag. And I ran up there and I grabbed his with the wheels on it. And I just started rolling it. I just stole it. I just ran it down the hill. And I rolled it. And right as I rolled in our pit, Don Law just turned the corner. And he was like, what? And I was like, oh, that's this is yours. And he's like, yeah, where was I? He went to go get it.
Yeah.
Because
you beat him to it.
You understand Don Law is a great guy, but we've seen him two times the whole time we were there. Like, he's just walking around. I don't know why he put his head into our paddock the second I left to go steal his equipment, but he did. And then when I got back, he was standing there, and then we plugged his in, and his battery was dead.
Yeah.
Now, you know, my first thought was, it's not Don Law's battery that's dead. It's my jack isn't hooked up to anything.
Right. Yeah, something with the car. Then.
Which was a negative thought of mine, but consistent. Later on, or moments later, Don grabbed someone's mobile device, like a handheld tackle box with the cord hanging out, and he handed it to, like, he plugged that one in,
yeah.
And the car fired right over. And then when he was done, he took that thing and he handed it to Matt, and he said, take this with you. Because you have to go down to the corral, and you have to go down to the paddock.
And on top of the hill. Well, we thought, but you bump started it there.
You have to go to the top of the hill. You have to go to the grid. It's going to die. You need this.
In front of the castle where you guys were photographing. We got to go there.
So he handed it to Matt. Matt's like, okay. But you do understand everyone uses these things, and this is somebody else's.
We had it for 3 hours.
We borrowed it for 3 hours.
Oh, by the way, we took it from another Porsche guy.
Yeah,
so he was out there probably looking for that goddamn thing.
He was out there, but he made a mistake. He didn't bring it with him out there. He just left. So he handed it to Matt. And I was like, all right, as long as we got something that'll fire this car. And sure enough, the car was dead. The battery's dead. But every time Matt plugged it in, it would just fire. Because that's the Porsche guy's stuff. And we went, ran, had a good run, a couple of good runs. We'll compare the times to the Nissan. It was a lot drier. I think it'll probably be a little bit quicker, but we'll see. The car going up the hill was third gear, just getting into fourth, crossing the finish line. Pretty much maxed out in third gear. I'd say by the time you cross the start-finish, you may be going 110. But it's so narrow and so shaded that it seems so uphill that it seems kind of crazy that you're just going 110 miles an hour up a hill.
Yeah.
With no anything, just super tight. But it's fun and everyone's nice and the spirit is great and everything's there. It was funny when we got back after 3 hours, just to put a butt on this whole thing, the driver of the guy driving the Coca-Cola 935 went, hey, do you have our charger? And I was like, we have a charger. I don't know if it's yours. And I'm like, where is that? And he starts like looking through our camera equipment stuff. And he's
yeah.
like, and it was kind of good because
I tried to sneak in and put it back where Don Law told me.
Yeah, but
me.
I didn't know where you were or like where it was. And he kind of like started going through our stuff.
How did he get word we had it?
I don't know.
Maybe it was because his name was on it. It written in bright Sharpie, gold Sharpie on a black case.
There was a name on it. And he started going through our stuff. And we're like, is it this it? And he's like, no, that's not it. And then, like, at a certain point, Matt had slid it back. So I was like, I don't know. Maybe it's back over there. And the guy's like, oh, I guess it's here. And it was like, it was a weird.
I was like, I don't know. I found one out there, and I just brought it over.
Yeah.
Somebody said this is where it goes.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it wasn't fair to throw Don Law under the bus, and I wasn't about to take blame for that. So,
but Don did grab it.
He did grab it. He told me later. He didn't tell me right away. He told me two jumps into it. By the way, that battery's probably no good anymore. We hit that thing 7 times.
Yeah, but thanks to the spirit of the Goodwood Racer, you know, we got to borrow that guy's equipment. And we weren't probably going to make the run otherwise, although we could have bump-started the car, which I hadn't bump-started a car since, like, high school. But coming down that hill was very easy to bump-start that car. It's just, it's a constant anxiety because the car is so the car's a crazy car. It's got the turbo engines and it's fuel injected, and it's always kind of like bleh, 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 bleh. And you see the lights on the dash that light up when the engine shuts off, and they're always lighting up because it's like thinking it's about to stop, you know, bleh, 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 bleh. And then you put it in first gear and they're trying to get you around through the paddock and everything, and it's such a pain in the ass, and you keep thinking it's going to stall, and you have this anxiety because once the engine stops, you know it's never starting again, and Matt's nowhere to be found, and you're strapped into the car, and you're going to have to like start waving your hand outside the window so people start pushing you. Goldberg helped us get pushed back into the pit.
Yeah.
At one
point, he was nice there. He ran Mike Skinner's Toyota NASCAR truck. He had a little trouble. We'll get into that next week when we sit down in the studio, when I sit down with Goldberg. He'll tell you all about it. He deserves to tell you the story straight from his own mouth. We're pretty much running out of time here. We're going to get to the airport. So why don't we go back, review some footage, and we'll pull something for CarCast next week, and we can do a little bit more of a play-by-play on this. And the videos that Nate's putting together for Vero and Motor Trend, we're about, about a month?
Yeah.
It'd be about a month, and he'll have those. And we'll tell you where you're going to be able to find all those things and how you're going to see them. And where we had a great interviews and featured a bunch of great cars and great people. So we'll get into that as well. But I think we're about done with this country for the day.
So until next time, it's Adam Carolla from Matt the Motorator, DeAndrea, saying keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.